If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
During the State of the Union address, Republicans broke out into chants of USA. USA said Betsy DeVos, "I was told there would be no spelling."
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth talks to CNN's Jake Tapper, who also takes a few more questions backstage just for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
Remember, this speech was supposed to be last week, but it was postponed due to the government shutdown. And as he prepared for tonight's address, Trump was once again threatening the possibility of a second shutdown when government funding runs out on February 15th. Trump still wants Democrats to give him money for his border wall, even though public opinion is still firmly against him. And that's because he just keeps saying the same things over and over. Eventually, people are just going to tune you out. Sure, the first time you see a crazy guy yelling on the subway, you move down to the other end of the car. But the 10th time you see one, you just put your headphones in and listen to a podcast about America's mental health crisis. For example, here's Trump yet again repeating his claim that previous presidents should have built a wall on the southern border.
We're going to strengthen up our southern border. That should have been done 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 20 years ago, 10 years ago. 5 years ago.
Those are all the numbers he knows. And you know, he just threw in 5 years ago because he wasn't quite sure if Obama was president 10 years ago. Also, if anyone should be happy a previous president didn't build a wall, it should be you. If there was already a wall, what would people have chanted at your rallies? Maintain the previously erected wall?
Obama built the wall, but I'm gonna keep it clean because it was filthy under Obama. A filthy, filthy, embarrassing wall. Oh, we're gonna clean it. Oh, we're gonna clean it. Oh, you're gonna eat off the wall.
Now, in his speech tonight, Trump claimed he was interested in bipartisan compromise, and even though he caved on the shutdown last month without getting any money for his wall, his allies on Fox News have been pretending it was actually a major victory.
He did not cave. He made a tactical decision, a strategy decision to pick the ground to fight on.
Anyone out there, by the way, thinking President Trump caved today, you don't really know the Donald Trump I know. He right now holds all the cards.
That's right. Trump holds all the cards, except he's holding them facing out and upside down, and they're Monopoly cards. They are not Monopoly cards! She screams he did not cave like she's in a cave. In his speech to Congress tonight, Trump also repeated his claim that a border wall would stop crime and drugs from pouring into the country, despite the fact that immigrants commit crimes at a lower rate than native-born Americans, and most illegal drugs come through ports of entry. Trump's been making that same argument for years, and polls show most Americans still aren't buying it. That's why in the run-up to his speech tonight, Trump started making a new, dumber argument: walls work because cars have wheels. And what's even more insane is that Republican senators like Ted Cruz have actually been repeating that argument.
They say a wall is medieval. Well, so is a wheel. A wheel is older than a wall. And I looked, and every single car out there, even the really expensive ones that the Secret Service uses, and believe me, they are expensive. I said, do they all have wheels? Yes. Oh, I thought it was medieval.
You know, the president has a good observation. He said, I'll tell you something else that's medieval, the wheel. There's a reason the wheel is medieval, because it rolls things and it works. Walls are effective.
You know what's medieval? That beard. You look like you're about to arrest Robin Hood. Now, that argument was so dumb, even Trump knew better than to include it in his speech tonight. Instead, the theme of tonight's speech was supposed to be unity, even with the specter of a second government shutdown looming over the whole affair, which is why, coming into tonight, everyone was very eager to see the dynamic between Trump and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who would be sitting behind Trump for the first time. Remember, for the last two State of the Union speeches, Trump had Vice President Mike Pence and House Speaker Paul Ryan behind him, standing and cheering for everything he said like Southern pageant moms. Yes, Kaylee, you are serving looks tonight! Kaylee! And there's a long history of the people sitting behind the president getting just as much attention during the State of the Union as the president himself. Just look at former House Speaker John Boehner, who always glared at Obama like a supervillain plotting his revenge. Or former Vice President Joe Biden, who always looked like he was going room to room at a house party, making sure everyone had enough booze. You good, Chad? How about you, Rick? I'm making margs. Another marg, Chad? One more for you? Maybe just one big one? Two straws? Gonna do a cannonball later. You guys might want to come out to the pool. And the Trump-Pelosi dynamic, the dynamic is going to be especially fascinating to watch given just how overmatched Trump has been in his negotiations with her over the last few weeks. Over the weekend, Trump told CBS he couldn't get a deal done with Pelosi because she wouldn't budge on anything.
You had quite the showdown with Speaker Pelosi. What did you learn about negotiating with her?
Well, I think that she was very rigid.
Yeah, of course she's rigid. It's a negotiation. This guy wrote The Art of the Deal, and he has no idea how a deal works.
I gotta be honest, I feel like she and I want different things.
Trump was insistent as recently as last week that he would get the better of Pelosi, and he was confident that he'd get his wall. Let's see how he felt about the status of the wall today, just hours before his big speech.
President Trump tweeted this. Tremendous numbers of people are coming up through Mexico in the hopes of flooding our southern border. We have sent additional military. We will build a human wall if necessary.
A human wall? He negotiated himself down from a concrete wall to a steel barrier to a fence to a human wall. Who are the humans in the wall anyway? Are you and your weird sons gonna go down to the border and play Red Rover?
Red Rover, Red Rover. Send immigrants over.
Now, there are all kinds of State of the Union traditions most people don't know about. For example, every year there's one administration official appointed as a designated survivor who stays in a separate location in case disaster strikes. And tonight that designated survivor was Energy Secretary Rick Perry. Can you imagine hearing the news that the Capitol had been blown up and everyone had been killed and then hearing the newscaster say, and so now we go live for an address from President Rick Perry? I mean, at least we know what he'd say.
Oops.
And in fact, before Trump's speech even started, we already had one big oops moment. Trump's weirdly crooked tie. Look at that. Trump is so unpopular, even his tie has moved to the left. Now, understanding what Trump is saying at any given moment can be difficult for casual observers, let alone professional politicians who are used to normal human syntax, which might explain why at one point Nancy Pelosi seemed to be reading along with a printed copy of the speech. She looks like a babysitter reading the rules of a board game while the kids are just chucking game pieces at each other. She looks like she's checking the playbill to see who the understudy is. Oh, it's Alec Baldwin. But this was the first time This is the first time we got to see in real time the two different reactions of Pence on the one hand and Pelosi on the other, and it was very revealing. As he repeated the same talking points he often repeats at every speech, Pence applauded enthusiastically, while Pelosi was much more muted.
African-American, Hispanic-American, and Asian-American unemployment have all reached their lowest levels ever recorded.
Look at them. Pence is like a dad who's proud that his kid keyed the principal's car, and Pelosi's like a mom who's thinking to herself, I wish I had a daughter. But the reactions were most telling when Trump alluded to the many investigations of his presidency, including investigations and oversight being conducted by Democrats in Congress, and implied that those investigations were somehow hurting the economy.
An economic miracle is taking place in the United States, and the only thing that can stop it are foolish wars, politics, or ridiculous partisan investigations. If there is going to be peace and legislation, there cannot be war and investigation. It just doesn't work that way.
I'm sorry, you think the investigations are hurting the economy? If anything, you've created thousands of jobs for lawyers. This is such an insane argument. He's like a guy who gets pulled over for drunk driving and says, "Officer, I can't focus on the road with a breathalyzer in my mouth." And eventually, Trump got to the central promise of his campaign and presidency, the thing he shut down the government over, his wall. And despite all the contradictory messages he sent over the past several weeks, Trump insisted that he would definitely get that wall.
My administration has sent to Congress a common-sense proposal to end the crisis on the southern border. In the past, most of the people in this room voted for a wall, but the proper wall never got built. I will get it built.
Oh, you're gonna get it built? You went from promising it would be a concrete wall to saying it would be a human wall. What's next?
Walls work, and so do wheels, and that's why the wall will be built out of wheels. Oh, no, the wall's rolling into the ocean. Oh, wheel wall. Oh, why? Goodbye, Will Wall! I love you, Will Wall!
Trump then moved on to the economy, and when he mentioned the percentage of new jobs occupied by women, the record number of female freshman Democrats in the audience started dancing like the cool aunts at a wedding. Trump then had the audacity to note the fact that more women were serving in Congress than ever before, as if he had something to do with it.
We also have more women serving in Congress than at any time before.
Look at Pelosi letting everyone know where those women are. Also, I love that Trump thinks he can take credit for that.
The only reason they got elected is that most people hate me. You're welcome, everyone.
In fact, a wave of Democrats was elected to Congress in November, running in part on a progressive economic agenda, with some, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, openly embracing the label of Democratic Socialist. Democrats also ran in part against Trump's deeply unpopular tax cut for corporations and the wealthy, and polls have shown support for policies like a wealth tax or a higher income tax for the richest Americans surging even among Republicans. So Trump decided to take a swipe at the Democratic Socialists in the room.
Here in the United States, we are alarmed by the new calls to adopt socialism in our country. America was founded on liberty and independence, and not government coercion, domination, and control. We are born free, and we will stay free.
Look at Bernie's face. That's the face he makes when the waiter catches him stuffing sugar packets in his pocket.
All the sugar packets are being hoarded by the millionaires and billionaires. Sugar to the people!
We've been here many times before. We all know the real Trump is the one who will reappear on Twitter tomorrow. In his speech tonight, he attacked the investigations of his presidency and he repeated his demand for a border wall. He just recycled many of the same talking points he always uses. In other words, he went round and round like
a wheel.
This has been a closer look. Our guest tonight is CNN's chief Washington correspondent. He hosts The Lead weekday afternoons, as well as the network Sunday show State of the Union. Please welcome back to the show our friend Jake Tapper. I'm so happy to have you here. I do want to say something. I know you're an Eagles fan. And
I am.
So you, this less ended a year of being able to say you were the world champion.
Just
Philadelphia Eagles.
Only last night, but yes.
Only last night. But yeah. I hope you enjoyed your run. It was a fantastic run, and I hope
it was great. Yeah. It never had happened in my lifetime.
So yeah, I just want to say, you know, I hope you got the full amount of joy from it.
You're
and
saying
now,
this like it's never going to happen again.
No, I think right? Now it's just going to be just, it's the Patriots forever now.
No, that's not. That's not nice.
Yeah. We mentioned it tonight. You cover scandals as they break as well. Does this Ralph Northam moment seem any different than what we've gotten used to in politics?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, really crazy. Like, he's done everything wrong every step of the way. Forget the blackface thing, which is obviously abhorrent, and putting that on his yearbook page and whatever happened, but just, this is like crisis communications 101. What not to do.
Yeah.
Like, he changed his story. It's me. It's not me. He almost moonwalked.
Yeah.
His wife also, the inappropriate circumstances, like, obviously says that a lot. I think not just about moonwalking.
Yeah.
I think just like they're at a dinner party.
I will give him a little credit. He knows to look to her.
He listens.
You know.
You know what? I've seen the clip so many times, and this time I really keyed in on her face when he talked about, you know, I won that dance contest. So what?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? You won that, like, he's bragging.
And to the end of the day, he wants to get that detail out as well.
By the way, I won. Did I mention, like, you're all mad about the blackface, but I won.
Yeah.
Did you not understand that?
It's like he's saying, there were a lot of guys in blackface there who didn't come close to winning.
No, seriously.
Imagine how embarrassed they are.
And by the way, I was 15 in 1984, so I remember people dressing up as Michael Jackson for like Halloween or whatever. All you need is the jacket and the glove.
Yeah,
that's not.
Right.
Red jacket, white glove. You're Michael Jackson.
Right. It's not like you had to dress up like Ralph Northam. Nobody knows who that would be in a costume.
That would be difficult.
There has been, some on the right have said, if this was a Republican that did this, the media would be howling at a much louder volume than they are here.
Have we not been howling loud enough?
It seems like pretty good howls.
We've all been in full howl.
Yeah.
I mean, and
I would like to point out, this is the least we've mentioned the president in a closer look in months.
And I have to say also, like, you were very conservative in your estimation. You said virtually every Democrat. I don't think there is a current Democratic elected office holder who has said he should stay in office. Like, not one. Like, you can find a Democrat to support anything. You can find a Democrat who supports Maduro and Republicans too on the other side. But you can find a Democrat who supports Maduro in Venezuela. You can find a Democrat who says we should talk to Assad. You can find a Democrat. But there's not one who's supporting him on this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really unbelievable.
And what do you think their war room is like right now? Because obviously, you know, he's made this decision not to immediately resign. Do you think the conversation is going to eventually lead him, you know, when he talks to his staff and his advisors, to walk away from this?
I hadn't thought about what his war room is like, but that's an interesting question. First of all,
I mean, I'm assuming they moved the table against the wall so he can, like, he thinks best when he moonwalks.
A lot of moonwalking.
Yeah.
Red jacket.
It's also tough to know. It's tough to know when he leaves office, because the issue with the moonwalk is it looks like
you're
coming when you're going.
You're actually going backwards. I don't know what kind of war room it is, but it doesn't seem like there are a lot of generals.
Yeah,
there's
not.
I mean, I don't understand the decisions being made.
Yeah. We have a State of the Union tomorrow.
That's right.
A week later than we were expecting. We were talking backstage. You will obviously be discussing it after the fact. Now that we're sort of into a conventional State of the Union, are we going to learn anything? Are we going to glean anything from tomorrow?
I mean, I think no matter what kind of speech President Trump gives tomorrow, he's going to continue to govern and tweet the way he's been governing and tweeting. I mean, I think the pivoting, there's no more talk of pivoting.
Yeah.
Or moonwalking.
No. It's just like,
he could give a very unifying address tomorrow and talk about the ways that Democrats and Republicans... Somebody's making better jokes.
Up there.
And all the ways that Democrats and Republicans can work together in this and that. And I think everybody's like, okay, we know tomorrow morning, you know, what's going to happen.
Yeah. And we were saying backstage, I think the thing that I'm looking forward to the most is that Nancy Pelosi will be sitting behind him, and he knows that. And I just think in his head, I predict a lot of him looking back. Anytime he gets a standing ovation from Republicans, looking back at her and saying, like,
I mean, she does seem to have gotten into his head.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't really know. He hasn't come up with a nickname.
Yeah.
He does seem to have a grudging respect for her. The Democrats stayed unified during the longest shutdown in American history, didn't budge. So I don't know that he's going to look, but he'll sense her.
And there is, of course, this another sense people have is there's not a lot of progress being made as we, you know, could move forward towards the next deadline. Do you think there's any chance we're going to have another shutdown? Do you think the...
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he had the longest one in American history, 35 days.
Yeah.
So why not top it?
Right. Yeah.
I mean, look, here's the thing. And I saw when my friend Chris Hayes was here, like, we know you can just do a border fencing, and that's enough. That will do what President Trump wants, stop the undocumented immigrants from crossing in their cars and trucks, and it won't be a wall. And there's the compromise right there. It's right there, and everybody knows it. Just whatever the Border Patrol experts say, which is not a cement wall, but and it seemed like they were moving towards that way. President Trump was like, I don't care what you call it, steel slats, a fence. You can call it peaches.
He did say that.
He said that. You can call it peaches. And Nancy Pelosi said, we're not going to have a wall. But you say, well, what about border fencing? What? I said, that's fine. She says, that's fine. And then all of a sudden, Trump said, it's a wall. It's a wall. Goes back to what it was before. We're only calling it a wall. Why? We were right there. We were right there. We had a compromise right there.
It's weird how I think it's the hardest job in the world, but he just makes it look so easy to screw it up. You know, you realize, like, oh, it's just you can just decide to change your mind when you're the president, and then all of us have to just scramble. Like, you know, he doesn't have to go resubmit 1,000 pages that explains why it's a wall. And he just goes, now it's a wall again. I changed my mind. And you just go, oh, my goodness, what a nightmare.
And it's very frustrating for the people who try to negotiate on his behalf.
Yeah.
Or the people, the Republicans in Congress, Republicans in the House or Senate, who are trying to make deals and want to. That's why Mitch McConnell stopped negotiating to keep the government, to try to open the government, because the White House had told Senate Republicans, we'll sign this government spending bill. Go ahead and do it. And so they passed it. And then he said, no, I'm not. I'm not going to do it anymore. And then the government shut down. So Mitch McConnell said, okay, you'll let me know when there's something you'll sign.
Yeah.
And then he went, you know, to Tahiti.
It's a weird time. It's a very weird time.
It's very strange.
You did a town hall with Kamala Harris. You have been on campaigns before. What is life like for, you know, because as this gets started now and it's going to be what seems like another full 2 years of this, what's life like being a campaign reporter? Do you have any tips for people who are about to embark on it?
There are a lot of, first of all, it's the greatest job in the world for people of a certain age, which is younger than me.
Uh-huh.
And you.
Younger than me now, too.
So you need to be able to learn how to sleep any chance you get. So there's a lot of Midwestern cities. So, you know, from a flight from Cleveland to Detroit, even if it's only 45 minutes, you need instant sleep. So you need a neck pillow.
Oh, wow.
I would start every campaign with a neck pillow, and everybody would laugh at me. And by the end of the campaign, everybody had a neck pillow.
Gotcha. You were an early adopter on the neck pillow.
Yeah. Charge your devices any chance you get, every single chance you get. Keep your eyes peeled. I met my wife in 2004 at the Iowa caucus.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well done.
And just because it's free, whether it's food or drink, doesn't mean that it's without consequence.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. On campaign, the filing rooms have tons of starches and breads and cookies and cakes. And then, you know, by the end, the plane is like...
Just sagging, sagging in the middle.
The campaigns have... Yeah, the campaigns... The reporters have gained enough weight to, like, form 7 other reporters.
Thank you for being here, buddy. I really appreciate it.
Great to be here.
Jay Tapper, everybody!
Hi, this is Henry from Late Night. I'm here with Jake Tapper from CNN. You and Seth were talking about State of the Union tomorrow night. And obviously this is like happening a few weeks out from possible another government shutdown.
Yeah.
We know what's going to happen. Do you have any sense that the White House, after watching what happened in the first shutdown, has any sort of empathy for the 800,000 plus federal employees that were out of work because of this shutdown? Do they understand the human element of what happened at all?
It's tough to discern any compassion or understanding of that. I'm not saying that amidst the thousands of employees of the White House and the administration, no one feels sympathy or empathy for, especially the ones who themselves are furloughed and not paid, because there are people like that. But, I mean, the president was asked about it and people having a tough time buying groceries. And I guess he was like picturing some scene from, you know, Andy Griffith. And he said, oh, you just make an arrangement with the grocer.
Right.
And you had
They'll understand.
They'll understand. And the commerce secretary saying he didn't. I don't understand why people don't have just take out a loan.
It's a great Wilbur Ross.
Thank you so much. So
really
Jake. President Trump has a lot of strengths. I don't think he has the easiest time with empathy, especially for people who, I mean, this isn't meant to be rude, but I doubt he's bought a carton of milk before in his life. I mean, he's just born wealthy, and you know, so I,
and the people around him too, a lot of the people around him are from
super rich,
wildly wealthy families.
Yeah. So no, I don't think so. I don't think so. At least that wasn't their message. I mean, you didn't hear him come out and say, I feel horrible for these 800,000 federal employees who aren't being paid because of the intransigence of the Democrat. You know, it was just about the wall and about the wall and about the wall and this and that. And it's, you know, for people who live in towns with a lot of federal employees like Washington, it's not just Washington, of course, but it's all over the country. But in Washington, for instance, like, you know, you get in a cab, you get in an Uber, you go to a restaurant, and you see how much people are hurting.
I mean, really see it just from those.
Not just from the federal employees, but the second ripple effect of people who, like, nobody's coming into Washington, or all the tourists that didn't come for the entire month of January, which is a big tourist month.
Yeah.
All those schools that didn't come. And it's a lot of money. What they say, $3 billion lost and will never, never to return.
What were Republicans saying to you off camera, off air about what was going on?
This is stupid. Yeah. And there's no end game. Nobody has a plan.
Right.
It obviously was the president's shutdown. I don't say that in any sort of partisan sense.
He said it. Yeah.
He said it. He said he would gladly own the shutdown. Yeah. And the Republican controlled Senate passed a government spending bill. And then the president said he wasn't going to sign it. So obviously everybody was ready to have a government spending bill except for him. And so, you know, I don't think anybody thought it was wise.
Right. I want to ask about your town hall with Kamala Harris, which was 10 days ago or so.
One week ago.
It's hard to keep track of time.
Well, no, it's because every day is like a month in this new era. But
it was almost a year ago. Amazing to think. Kamala, it's amazing. It was just about a year ago, I want to say, this time last year.
I know. We just had a cake. It was 1 week. 1 week.
How did covering that and interviewing her in Iowa differ from being in your studio in D.C. or here in New York talking about politics? What do you kind of learn that you don't learn from just being in studio talking to reporters out there?
Well, first of all, a town hall is so different from an interview. An interview is what I want to know, and I get to ask follow-ups, and, you know, I have to calibrate my tone and figure out, like, you know, when to be tough, when to follow up, when not, when to move on, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Town halls are just almost entirely the people. I can do a follow-up here or there, but it's basically voters. And then, you know, in the first section, maybe I can do a follow-up or two, and then immediately we're behind schedule and I can ask no more follow-ups. So that's, it's a little frustrating.
Oh, I'm sure.
But by the same, as an interviewer, but by the same token, it's interesting because, you know, the real people, we had a farmer, we had a soybean farmer, and he had a question about trade, and it was a smart question, and a question I probably, to be honest, wouldn't have asked. Mm-hmm. But we're in Iowa, and this, you know, this guy's livelihood is affected by the tariffs. And so that was great. It was also good hearing questions of, you know, there were some people from the left who were trying to challenge her. You know, do you think the existence of billionaires is morally right? Mm-hmm. Do you think, you know, what about, how do you defend your record as a district attorney, et cetera, et cetera? So, I mean, it's just, it's always just good to hear what the actual voters think.
Right. Are you surprised at how different this Democratic primary is shaping up than last time? Not in terms of just the number of candidates, but literally now you have to ask, is the idea of billionaires a moral question?
Well, isn't
how
that interesting?
Will you provide entirely run government health insurance, which you talked to Kamala Harris about? Like, it's amazing how far left this conversation has gone.
And just think about it, in 2009, 2010, when I was covering the White House and President Obama was pushing forward Obamacare, the idea of a government option, which is to say an optional healthcare plan that you can sign into if you want to, or if your employer wants you to, but you don't have to, that was too liberal to get through a Democratic House and Senate.
Yep. Wildly controversial.
But now it is Medicare for All, which basically, it's essentially an end to private insurance companies. It says that, you know, only government can provide this range of health insurance, which is a ton of coverage, whatever you have, whatever the listeners have. And private insurance can't provide that. So they can provide, for instance, cosmetic surgery insurance or whatever. But generally, the end of private insurance companies. And that is a mainstream plan. It is the plan held by Bernie Sanders, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Elizabeth Warren. So, yeah, I mean, it is the Democratic Party has definitely become more progressive.
Yeah.
There's no two ways about it.
You've talked before on our show and on the podcast, I think, about how, you know, Trump watches your show. He says he doesn't watch CNN fake news.
Yeah.
But then he tweets about your show, and clearly it's quoting people on your show all the time.
Mainly the Sunday show. I think during executive time. I think his cable news consumption is mornings, evenings. I think he does, like, you know, Morning Joe and Fox and Friends.
Yeah.
And CNN New Day. And then I think he'll watch Hannity because that's his boy.
Oh, yeah.
That's his boy.
Best friend.
Yeah.
That's what he wants to hear.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, honestly,
who wouldn't want to watch that? An hour of just someone saying you're great. I get it.
Well,
so
and imagine if it was like, I mean, they're legitimately close friends.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, so imagine if your best friend had a show at 9 o'clock every night talking about how great you are.
What a great show.
That's a great show.
Every night.
And here's my guest.
Yeah.
Also, to agree.
Yeah.
To agree with how great Henry
delight.
Is.
Yeah.
And so I think after Hannity, he watches, you know, whatever's on at 10, and I think he flips around. But
right.
I think sometimes he'll watch clips of mine, but I think the only show of mine he really watches is Sunday morning.
Yeah. Do you think he's just obsessed already with the campaign? I mean, he's already talked about Kamala Harris's crowd size. Like, do you think he's going to be just an obsessive cable news viewer?
He is a political junkie.
Yeah,
this is not to impugn him. He is a political junkie the way that probably Seth is, or you are, or I am, or like he loves politics.
Yeah.
He loved it as an observer and as a donor for years.
Yeah.
So I think there's part of that. I think there's a difference between when he tells, like he told Margaret Brennan on CBS Sunday, that he didn't see anybody that worried him.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's true intellectually, but I don't know. Maybe it is.
I read something today that they're already very kind of worried about a possible Republican primary challenge.
Oh, I wouldn't if I were
but
them.
But it seems like he has a lock on the Republican Party. The Republican Party is behind
him. I mean, there is polling that indicates that a third of the Republican Party is open-minded.
Right.
But even among those Republicans, I saw polling that suggested that those Republicans that are open-minded, you put them against, okay, well, how about John Kasich?
Yeah.
Or how about Ted Cruz? They still go for Trump.
Right.
They still go for Trump.
It was like the 2016 primary. The people who weren't for Trump, but then by the end of the day, they all ended up.
And I think he has a lock. He's remade the Republican Party into an image of himself. So, I mean, I think the question is, who are the Democrats going to put up? And are the Democrats going to put up somebody that can get the Democratic base excited while also not... Remember, Trump won in no small part because he won independent voters.
Yeah.
And he's polling horribly with independents right now. So can Democrats nominate somebody that holds the Democratic base, the progressive base, gets them excited, while also reaching those independents? That's going to be the challenge.
And it seems like right now there is not a clear consensus on...
It's wide open. I think it's a pretty good Democratic field in the same way I thought that the Republican field in 2016 was a pretty talented Republican field. But we'll see. I mean,
it's like Howard Schultz's game to win.
Howard Schultz. It's interesting. I mean, you know, one of the things about Howard Schultz that's frustrating is for me is do an interview. Like, you know, he's done a lot. Like, he did The View. He did Morning Joe. Mm-hmm. He did 60 Minutes. So he hasn't. It's not that he hasn't done tough questioners, but he hasn't done me, he hasn't done Chuck Todd, he hasn't done, you know, Sunday shows or political anchors.
To press him on policy stuff, too.
That's
a very political conversation with him right now.
We're not talking
about policy.
Well, that's the other thing, is people are asking him a lot of questions about, like, what you're saying.
Right. Can you win?
Who are your voters?
You
know, exactly. And what I'd like to know is what he stands for. What does he stand for? Because he seems to me very much like a moderate Democrat. And polling indicates that in terms of the field for the world of Socially liberal, fiscally conservative, which is what he is, that's really not that many people.
That's gone.
Well, it's like reporters and him, right? I mean, it's like it's not. There aren't really that many people who are like that.
Yeah.
Socially liberal and fiscally conservative.
Right.
And there really is probably more of an opening for a third party that is socially conservative and fiscally liberal, which is actually what Trump is.
Right.
Because he doesn't care about entitlements and he doesn't care about deficits and
no.
He just wants to spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
But he's socially conservative, really.
That's
really where the power is, I think, right now in terms of growth potential for a third party. But that's not Howard Schultz.
Well, Bloomberg's socially very progressive and fiscally more moderate to conservative, but he's just running the Democratic primary.
But he's exactly. But yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing.
I get that. I think that's a smarter political choice.
But remember, he almost ran as an independent in 2016.
And looked at it.
But he looked at the polling, and I remember, I mean, he is saying now, to try to tell Schultz not to run, everything that his advisor would tell us off the record in 2015-16, which is the polling indicates there is not a huge demand for what he's selling.
Right.
Socially liberal, fiscally conservative.
Yeah.
I'm going to take away your guns, and I want to raise your Social Security tax.
Yeah.
But that's just a joke. I'm just being glib there. But that it would hurt the Democrat more.
Right. It is going to be wild to watch.
It's going to be crazy. It's going to be a lot of fun for political junkies.
I can't wait. I love it.
One of the things that I think is going to be most interesting is when Democrats go negative, because I feel like against each other. I mean, I don't know how it's going to be, what the reaction's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like there's almost going to be like, you know how there used to be in Republican primaries, the 11th commandment, Ronald Reagan's, thou shalt not speak ill of thy fellow Republican, which, by the way, nobody ever abided by, but I don't know why this was a thing, but I almost feel like Democrats are going to have one because they don't
screw this up.
Yeah.
Just same page.
Well, and also because there are a lot of Democrats, and maybe this isn't fair, but a lot of Democrats who felt that Bernie Sanders' criticisms of Hillary Clinton were so, maybe this is Hillary Clinton's fault more than Bernie Sanders, but were so on point that they really did lasting damage to her, even though polls indicate that Bernie supporters voted for Hillary.
The
damage that it did, the rhetoric.
There was a great Sherrod Brown quote. He was in Iowa this week, and they asked him, what do you think of Cory Booker jumped in? What do you think of the other kind of Democratic colleagues? He goes, I really like Cory Booker. I like a lot of people, not all of them. It was just like such a soft.
Well, it's interesting when they try to differentiate themselves. Like, how are you different?
Yeah.
Cory Booker's like, every night I go home to basically to low-income housing, and I'm like, I'm with people in pain. I'm in a neighborhood. Okay, so that's his. Sherrod Brown has one where he talks about, like, I'm the only one that's won a Midwestern state.
Mm-hmm.
And also people around Sherrod Brown will say he's the only one that's ever really had a tough contest. Mm-hmm. Because the others, you know, because Kamala Harris, Elizabeth Warren, Cory Booker, they all represent, like, liberal states.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Kamala Harris's opponent in her Senate race was a fellow Democrat because they have the jungle primaries there.
Oh, right. I couldn't remember that. Right.
Congresswoman Sanchez. So,
yeah.
You know, but they all have their differentiations, but they're all, none of them are like, well, I stand for the people, and they're a bunch of corrupt fat cats or whatever, you know, or like they're a bunch of sexist racists, and like I'm who I, you know,
right.
They're all pretty particular. Well, I was an English major.
The debates.
Do they know Chaucer? I mean, can they recite
these? You're going to have to ask these questions at the debate.
I know. Seriously.
You'll be moderating the debate.
Have any of you read Beowulf? You know, one thing I'll tell you that was cool about Cory Booker's announcement was Sports Illustrated put out a tweet showing, you know, he played football for Stanford.
Yeah,
and it showed him like with a decent. You know, it showed him playing football on the gridiron that day. So that was
awesome.
Yeah, that was kind of. I mean, I'm just saying, like, as somebody who has athletic envy, like, I wish I had played. I wish I had been good enough to play anything in college.
And then go on to be a senator. And he's a Rhodes Scholar too, right?
Was he a Rhodes Scholar? I do not know that. I'll have one of my producers look that up right now. Was Cory Booker a Rhodes Scholar? It sounds right. He's very smart.
Very smart.
He went to Stanford. He played football at Stanford.
Yeah.
And he was... I have two people here who work for CNN. And he was a Rhodes Scholar.
As I
told you, he was a Rhodes Scholar.
You were just saying.
He had a scholarship from Rhodes.
From Cecil
Rhodes. Cecil, if you knew him, which I did, of course.
Jake, thank you so much for being here.
It was great, Henry. Thanks for having me.
Send my regards to Cecil.
I will.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
Your favorite coffee shop down the street to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.